And it is Friday afternoon, so we are joined now by the mayor of Carrboro, Lydia Lavelle, by phone this week because she is up in Washington, D.C., along with fellow alderman Damon Siles at the International LGBT Leaders Conference. So she joins us by phone today. Mayor, thanks for joining us.
Happy to join you. I can't go through a week without talking to you, Eric.
So tell us about the conference. It's the International LGBT Leaders Conference. What's going on up there? How big is it?
Well, it's great. I mean, there are hundreds of people here. It's a conference that I have never been able to attend because I've always had to balance it with what I've got going on in my school life, and I was able to work it out this year. I think it's a really, really important conference, particularly this year, and in fact, the organizers have been saying, but the conference is really taking on a decidedly different kind of tone and agenda in light of the election, which was just about a month ago this week. So part of it is discussing and learning about and, for example, learning about the different appointments that are being made to the cabinets and other positions, talking about ways we may or may not be able to advocate with the new administration in terms of more LGBT appointments. We've, of course, in President Obama's administration, we had more than ever before, and not even really sure if we'll have any in this administration, but how we go about really continuing messaging around all of the, strides that we have made and all of the forward progress we've made in the last 8 years, and how we can try to work to make sure we don't have a backslide during the next 4 years of the Trump administration.
What specifically is the biggest concern? I know there's a lot of different possible reasons to be concerned, but are there a couple that are sort of jumping out as the most significant?
Well, I would say, it's been across the board, all right? Like, we've heard from folks in different areas, such as HUD and the military and other specific departments. But I will say that North Carolina has been brought up a couple of times by keynote speakers. And, for once, it's in a somewhat proud way that I'm there as a North Carolina attendee because, they point out that North Carolina has been dealing with this for the last several years, and that it was a somewhat successful year in our state while electing President-elect Donald Trump, that we also defeated the incumbent governor, and they've looked specifically to the fact that that seems to set a message across our state that our citizens don't think highly of HB2 and don't think highly of discrimination. I think that little victories like that are part of what's, helping the tone here. We just had a really good session at lunchtime here where we heard from several folks who were in Congress, and including Senator Tammy Baldwin, but we also heard from Representative Sean Maloney from New York, and it was really interesting to hear him speak, too, in particular about how he really is starting to see more and more that he feels like non-discrimination type matters are more and more being supported by not just the Democrats but also the Republicans. And so he thinks that there's going to be continued support, perhaps, with that, with Republicans in Congress over the next couple of years. So that seems to be pretty good news.
So there's reason for optimism. There's also reason for pessimism. And I know there's a lot of concern, I mean, obviously at the conference, but just in general about, we've made these gains in the last 8 years, 15 years, 20 years. Is there going to be a backslide? What can elected leaders do? What can officials do? And what can individuals do, just whether they have elected office or not, to prevent the backslide from happening?
Yeah. So, no, it's a great question. A lot of people here asking that. And, of course, this conference is meant to encourage a lot of these leaders to get involved in running for office at the local level or the state level. But if not, then to certainly get involved with different groups, giving money, donating, getting involved with different groups that support all of the goals and objectives and values that we feel are going to get kind of quashed in the next 4 years. There was an interesting, the discussion really, though, about a lot of the nominees that have been put forth by President-elect Trump really absolutely illustrates that almost every single person to a T that has been nominated by this administration has really negative policies or opinions on any kind of LGBT advocacy. And so that's really, as you said, I mean, that's really very much a concern of this conference. And so trying to rise up together as elected leaders, and representative of large equality-based organizations to try to talk to this new administration and say, look, you know, we don't want to go backward, and in fact, we want to really talk to you about what we should continue going forward. It's a big task, Aaron, but, you know, it's there's a lot of energy in the conference, and I think the timing's probably good. Everyone's talking about getting through the stages of grief, and now we're coming out of it, and we really need to figure out, you know, what the line of attack is.
And I think one of the big things, we're speaking with Carbo Romero, Letty Lavelle again, and one of the big things to sort of be optimistic about it, to hold on to as a sign of optimism, is I have to assume that the size of this conference is growing and growing and growing every single year, right? Because, you know, 20, 25 mm-hmm. years ago, the number of elected officials in America that were LGBT was probably not very much more than a handful. Now there's a growing number.
No, you're exactly right. In fact, in comments today made at the keynote, the director of the Victory Institute noted that yesterday's elected officials session had the largest number of elected officials in the room to discuss these issues than ever before. It's the first one I've ever been at. But, you know, looking around the room, I would say there were probably maybe 60 or 70 of us there, just trying to think through how many were there. But it was really, you know, just a powerful group of folks talking about issues that are affecting all of us as elected leaders.
Speaking again with Carbo Romero, Letty Lavelle, and that's going on this week and weekend up in Washington, D.C. Got to turn back to local issues, though, because there was a big meeting of the Carbo Report of Aldermen on Tuesday to talk about and reject the plan for Lloyd Farm. It was a 5-2 vote. And I know this is something that you and I have been talking about on a regular basis over the course of the year, planning ahead for this development, and it's something that's been in the works for 5 years, but the vote came on Tuesday, and it was a 5-2 vote against, and I know there was disappointment among all seven of you that were voting either for or against. You were in favor of it, and you voted for it, but it was a 5-2 vote the other way. What is next for Lloyd Farm? What happens next week? What happens next year?
Well, you know, that's a question for the owners of the property, and I can imagine that they are kind of trying to regroup from the vote of the board. I've heard a little bit of discussion of this, you know, on your show here during the week, you know, and I think you've accurately pointed out that there were kind of, you know, three sets of votes, if you will, the evening of the vote. You know, one was the support that I had with Alderman Cheney to move forward with the project and citing, you know, a lot of the benefits that the project would bring to the town, but recognizing at the same time that that one of the reasons, for example, I felt like it was put forward was that project that was proposed had a really comprehensive stormwater plan that was tied to the overall site, and in my view, it was better than having projects and each of the zones that are in that project now coming through individually. And the comprehensive plan required stormwater analysis earlier in the process and in fact went a little bit beyond some of the requirements in the ordinance. So I felt like it was a way to, it was certainly not going to end by, you know, data provided by our engineer as well as the applicants, but, you know, neutral engineers, it was not going to exacerbate stormwater issues that we have on the neighbors. And then I took our professional opinions into account as well as what I felt like was a better way to tackle the stormwater issues there. I also, you know, thought that certainly the increased revenue that we were going to be getting from the project could help us, you know, as we are going to be struggling to find funds to deal with the stormwater issues, it certainly could help in that light, along with our stormwater fee structure we're going to be implementing next year. However, you know, some other folks on the board felt like that was too great a risk, that to approve this project would exacerbate the flooding issues, the stormwater issues that we're having on the neighbors, and they would rather see just whatever comes through individually with the projects, which, you know, I think it's kind of, I think one of the quotes that night was, we know what we're getting with this project, you know, we're not sure what's going to come through now with, you know, if projects are put forward on all the different individual parcels that were in this project. And then we had a couple of folks on the board who rejected it, you know, not because of the flooding, not because of any of the issues necessarily of the neighbors, but because they felt like this project represented one of our last pieces of property where we could really have kind of a compact, dense, new urban-style development, more befitting of, for example, a town or a downtown. It felt like this was not as good a use of the land as possible. So really, three different kind of breakdowns of the vote. And I think it was overall very, very disappointing because we all recognize that these owners have put a lot of time and energy and money and effort into the process. They reached out to the town. They said, you know, what can we do here? We worked through the mediation process and just really disappointment that we couldn't come to a majority vote on it.
Now, have you spoken with the owners or has there been communication between the owners and town officials since Tuesday night?
I have not even been in town hall or Carver since then to be around to do it. But I know on the way out, I gave them a wave, but I haven't heard anything from them. And I haven't heard that we have made any contact with them either.
So what do we expect to see next for 2017 for Lloyd Farm? Is there any sense yet of what is going to be the next step? Is it going to be broken up into individual parcels? Are we going to go back to try to have a more comprehensive plan?
You know, I don't want to speak for the owners because I imagine they are pretty frustrated. And so, you know, I know what they could do is that, you know, there are at least close to 17 acres of B4 zoned land that could be available for a variety of non-residential issues, a lot of different type of commercial on the part that's zoned B4. And then there are a couple of other, there's an R10 and R20 different properties also with it that could have anywhere up to over 100 units on it residential-wise. So we'll have to kind of see how they decide to regroup and move forward.
Speaking with Carver Mayor Lydia Lavelle, and we've got another issue to move on to, and we'll do that in just a second. But before we do, any sort of thoughts about the development process and the way that it took place with Lloyd Farm? And one of the things that everyone was concerned about and kind of disappointed in was the fact that we had this process that I know the town really takes a lot of pride in, sitting down with the owners and residents and town officials and staff and boards and everything and trying to work out disagreements and resolve disputes and compromise before the formal process. And it has worked in previous cases, not so much in this one, at least not yet. Are there thoughts about the process in general and sort of making changes or adjustments going forward?
So I think we all have a disappointment that this mediation process didn't work, right? And the reason we went into a mediation process was because at the time that it would have been referred to a public hearing, there wasn't even a majority vote to move it forward at that time. And so we said, well, let's back up. Let's find out what the areas of disagreement are and see if we can come to some kind of a compromise among these different groups. Well, you know, the net effect, of course, is that mediation process, while done in good faith, is non-binding. And in fact, you know, we saw that the three board appointments to that mediation process all voted against the project, you know, for you know what each of them believed were really valid, you know, reasons to their personal selves, which is fine. You know, I think that, you know, in the court system or, you know, alternative dispute resolution system, when you go through mediation, there's kind of an expectation that the end result, everyone gives and takes a little, and this is what's going to go forward. And, you know, I think we've seen that, you know, there are some situations, obviously this is one of them, where that will not work in local government. I'll tell you, I think I will think long and hard in the future before we agree to move something to mediation right offhand without really thinking through what was that set up in terms of expectations for all the parties. I do think it's good in some circumstances. This is obviously a case where it didn't work.
Speaking with Carver Mayor Lydia Lavelle, and Mayor, we got to let you go in a couple of minutes, and I know you got to get back to the conference. But before we do, a developing story that I don't think we've reported on yet, but seeing reports on it on social media, which is a new development for that property on Greensboro Street and Weaver Street, where I still call it the CVS building, but it's that building that was going to be a CVS that ended up not being, and it's just sort of sat there fallow for the last couple of years. And I know that's something that the Board of Aldermen, Carborough residents, town staff has been really, really concerned about. What can we do about this property, which is this eyesore right in the middle of downtown Carborough? But there's word now that things are going to be happening with this, right?
Yes. So I think I've mentioned to you that the number one concern I've gotten asked about these 3 years that I've been mayor is, what are you all going to do about that building on that property? So after, you know, lots of outreach and attempts by myself personally as well as members of the staff to talk with CVS about doing something about that property, because CVS owns the property. You're right. It's not a CVS, but they own the property. Our board instructed our staff, asked our staff and a town attorney to to, you know, create this, an ordinance this fall that would allow us to be able to go into the non-residential buildings in town that looked like they were in a state of disrepair upon notice to the owner and so forth. And we set out a whole lot of you know, reasons for that, as well as conditions under which that could occur. And this building clearly met all of those conditions. So after we passed the ordinance and so on, staff was in touch with CBS representatives, and they met them at the site and took a walkthrough of that building. And we received notice, I believe it was yesterday, official notice, although at the site, on the day of the walkthrough, the CBS representative indicated that he was going to, this was going to be his recommendation to CBS corporate. But they've signed a contract with a company to demolish the building that's on the site. And first they have to do kind of an asbestos report, and then they need to go through review and approval by the state before that happens. But the company that will be completing the demolition will be doing it as soon as possible. So it might be, Aaron, by the new year, it might be just a flat piece of land there.
I know that's really good news for a lot of people in Carver. I know that's something that that you and other town staff have worked for a long time. I have to ask, was the CVS representative surprised by the condition of the building?
Well, you know, it was a gentleman who was the region facility manager for North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, and he actually may have even been out of Rhode Island or somewhere. I mean, he's clearly a regional fellow who had perhaps maybe never even been to the site.
Okay.
But once we passed the ordinance, once we reached out with our official notification of the town code violation, CVS was spot on, and they came and they arranged a meeting, and he was there. And the feedback I got was that they all walked in the building as they walked through. There was really no question that it was going to have to be torn down. And CVS very quickly and very professionally has moved forward with and lining up someone to take care of the deconstruction of the building and cleaning it up. So we're really excited about that.
That's great news. Any sense on what's next for the property? Because ownership isn't going to change, so, or at least not right now. So are there plans for that property right now?
Right, right. I have not seen any plans, but my understanding, I believe, is that CBS is going to be submitting, or maybe he even has already submitted some type of a project proposal to our town staff. But if that's the case, if it's already been submitted or if it's in the works, it's not something I've seen yet.
And last question before we let you go, what is the relationship like between town staff and CVS? I know this is another issue where CVS has this project on the table, the proposal from a few years ago. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of talk, and then it ended up not going anywhere. How has the relationship been between the town and the company?
Well, I'll tell you, in my view, I think that their cooperation with this event, this is just me personally, I find it very heartening that happened. That they've really listened to us, and when we told them what was happening, they were very responsive. My understanding is that they actually have submitted a rezoning application, but I'm not sure again, you know, what it looks like. My memory is that it maybe is linked just to the properties that they own. You know, like they've scaled back the submission of whatever project they're going to put forward. But I'm sure we'll hear more about that in time to come. It's probably in short order.
And, Mayor, we got to let you get back to the conference. Anything else going on in town that people need to know about?
Not that I can think of. One thing I do hate, Aaron, is I love being at this conference, but I hated missing the Hometown Heroes event at University Place. And I'm going to miss being there tonight to count down the tree in front of Carver Town Hall, and there's going to be a countdown. Michelle Johnson, Mayor for Town, is going to lead the countdown so that Santa can hear and turn on the Christmas tree lights in front of Town Hall. And then Damon and I will not be participating in the holiday parade on Saturday. But there's always a lot happening this time of year, but there's always a lot of great things happening everywhere. So hey, we won't be there. We'll be there in spirit.
Well, enjoy the rest of the conference. We'll see you when you get back. Carver or Mayor Lydia Lavelle, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.